Are you ready to rock? Put your hands in the air and wave them like you just don't care.
That's right, party people. Get ready for one night of ecstasy. July 17th at the Musky Shop Bash After Party. DJ Tommy Fresh spins all the hottest Musky rave tracks all night long.
Let's rock this place.
Come rage all night with me, DJ Tommy Fresh, at the Musky Shop Bash After Party.
But the fun doesn't end there, folks. Stick around for the after party. After party with DJ EJ, a.k.a. Elmer Jensen. And a stirring tribute to Daft Punk by DJ Johnny Boy. July 17th, the Musky Shop Bash, Minocqua, Wisconsin.
All right, folks. Welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, a Jaybird. Are you feeling
it? Hey, hold on a sec. Yeah, hold on a second, Steve. I'm on the other line with DJ Tommy Fresh right now. We're working on the set list. Okay, got it.
Got it.
It's all good. Hey, how you doing?
Oh, buddy. I'm ready for the Musky rave.
After the
Musky Shop Bash, join us for the Musky rave. You know, the greatest ensemble of Musky speakers. And then we're just
that was an absolute wonderful, wonderful selection of hip-hop raveness.
What are you going to do, folks? Listen, I will say this. If there's enough podcasters there, let me... we can do something after, I'll say that. we'll find somewhere to go be idiots at, which would be fun. But we're not going to do it in the parking lot. Anyway... Other than that, we're getting really close to the illustrious Musky Shop Bash. If you don't know, if you're not beat over the head with it, you got Joe Booker, Pete Maina, Steve Herbeck, me, Matt Rayleigh, Russ Smith, tons of baits. It's going to be super cool. Be there or be square. And final warning. Final warning. If you want to fish with me, you want to fish with Jay, you want to fish with Jim from the Musky Shop, let us know at the bash. We are getting so many emails. It's going to fill up fast. It's going to be first come, first serve. We will try to take as many people as we possibly can. We're going to make that happen. But we need to talk about a couple things here. A, Ranger VIP. Okay.
Okay.
Be sure.
Let's get the important things out of the way first off is what you're saying.
Right. We're going to have the Ranger VIP. Don't miss that. But no, in all seriousness. The topic of the day, the conversation that's been going on is hot water and hot weather. It's been hot. Heard they had 300 degree water temps on the Madison chain.
Yeah. I mean, the heat wave's over here in Wisconsin.
Right.
I mean, I woke up this morning, it was in the low 40s. So, I mean, temperatures are coming way back down, you know, to a normal. Yeah, everything's fine. It was... alert level kind of a nightmare there for about a week, and everything's fine and looks like the heat's all moving towards you guys now. So
Well, it's backing down, everybody's freaking out, how hot is it up there, all this stuff. It's normalizing. It's just a heat wave. With that being said, though, I'll just pay attention to where you're at. If you're fishing a body of water, we're not going to sit here and beat you to death over temps, but watch it on those high 70s, that 80 stuff. Watch it and make, especially if that's permeating down to the water column. But it seems like the heat is off. The other thing, and everybody keeps texting me, Canada. All right. What about Canada?
Have you heard anything?
Here's what I know. Not to be the bearer of the bad news. From my understanding, from what I've heard and what I've read, they're going to be negotiating, alleviating or removing travel restrictions here very shortly. With that being said, every piece of news that I've read, and I'm talking Canadian news, has talked about that a lot of people don't want it to happen. In the same sense that we think, like, we're just all going to run up there. Okay. So what I would say is this. I mean, if you look at here, decision on U.S.-Canadian border opening being closely watched. Let's look at this real quick. It's being closely watched. Blaine County, Washington. I'm looking here, you know. And I can tell you this. Everything that I've seen is it basically boils down to, I would be stunned. People are going to freak out if that thing opens in June, right? They're just not seeing it on the Canadian end of things. Okay. However, I can tell you, and we don't talk about a lot of real world things on the podcast because we don't want to make it real world. I'm not going to talk about the merits or the lack thereof of a vaccination or something of that nature. I can promise you, you're not getting across that that border without a vaccine.
Without proof of vaccine, some kind of card.
Yeah.
So yeah, and right now, I mean, in Wisconsin, I don't know what you guys got down there, but, you know, we got a paper card with like a nurse's initials on it, you know.
Right.
highly duplicatable.
Right.
In my opinion, yeah. You know.
Yeah, now, if you look at here, the Detroit Free Press, we have to find an acceptable level of risk. Right? So there's all these conversations right now. What they're dealing with still are family members that are split on either side of the border. Okay? I mean, if you look at this article from the Detroit Free Press, excuse me, can't talk today, they're mentioning that there are still family members that are split on either side of the border. I don't know if they're going to let the walleye boats just come trouncing in the day it opens. Right?
Okay, I see where you're going.
Yep. Yeah, I'm not trying to be grim. I'm just telling you what I'm seeing, what I'm reading. I would love to eat crow on this. I'd love to be wrong. However, the chances of a late June opening for you and 10 of your best friends to run up there in a boat full of crap to go fishing are slim. Unpopular opinion, but probably the right one. You know, I mean... With that being said, everybody keeps texting me, what do you think? I mean, I've got so much stuff to take care of. I've got to get up there. It's not even a matter of going up for funsies. It's like, how much stuff's ruined? What do you got going on, right? With that being said, I think they're going to wait until the fall. Before it's wide open for the way
for sportsmen, yeah,
for sportsmen, it's not.
They want to do a stage level kind of entry program where they start out with family members and whatever.
And it's not going to be
less recreational kind of excuses.
Hey Marty, we want to go to the bird and catch the walleye. It's not. No, they're not just going to let it rip roar. Other things that I've read regarding this topic have said that you're going to have to call in advance and you're going to have to prove that you got a vaccine. Again, we're not going to talk the merits of vaccines or anything of that nature, but if you don't have that, you're not getting across the border 100%. I can promise you that. Right? And so you've got to look at all those factors. I would say my best guess is September. Maybe I'm wrong.
Okay.
Right? But from my understanding, you're going to have to plan well in advance as well. So it's going to be like, I'm going to cross the border at Fort Francis and I'm going to do it on Saturday at this time. And here's the documentation that I need to do so. But it's going to be different than it was. I'm not trying to be grim. I'm trying to be realistic. If anybody that wants to go to Canada, you're talking to him. I've gone every year that I can remember. So just play it smart, make your plans accordingly. I would have a backup plan. That's the number one thing I've been telling people that have been texting me, is have a backup plan in place. If you're planning on that, I mean, I feel so bad for the lodge owners up there and everybody in Canada that's relying on the tourism, but
it's awful.
Just be measured about it. You know, yeah, get your hopes up, but on the other hand, play it smart. Like I said, the second we hear it's opening or I hear better news or there's better news on the docket, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope it opens. I hope you can take a walleye boat across the border all day long here shortly. We shall see.
Right.
You know, that's the thing. One thing, Jay, I would say we would be remiss, though. We just had that little spat of hot water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we glanced over it, but I want to say this. If you are fishing hot water conditions, and I'm talking it's tough, and I mean, we might have another heat wave, we might not, you know, who knows the way the weather's going right now, just use some safe handling practices. You don't have to bump board every fish. I don't bump board them anymore unless it's like a giant or something. Just use safe handling practices. Well, you know,
keep them in the net as long as possible.
I've sworn by the float ruler you guys have had for years.
Yeah. Great thing. Great tool.
Well, how much is that thing, Jay? Like $20?
$20. Come on. Lasts forever.
Yep. And I am the second owner of my dad's float ruler. It's 4 billion years old. It lays in the rod locker and it'll do the job. That'll give you everything you need to know info-wise.
So just... Yeah, and plus, I mean, it's a great toy. I mean, if you got kids, they love to pretend they're lightsabers. I've seen it a million times.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a lot of 60-inch floating ruler lightsaber fights in the Muskie Shop floor.
Mm-hmm. A lot of sword fights in there.
Well, I mean, even when Elmer's not there, there is. Yeah. But when he's there, it's, for some reason, he attracts swordsmen.
Oh, my God. Are you a swordsman? There can be only one Highlander.
There can be only one.
If you challenge Elmer Jensen to a sword fight at the Muskie Shop Bash, you win whatever you want from the store. I'll buy it for you. If you show up, listen, not sharpened.
Elmer fished the big, there was a big muskie tournament in Eagle River last weekend. 150 boats.
Right.
Really kind of the kickoff for our area for muskie tournament season. Fred, fabulous Freddie from the shop, he fished it too. Not with Elmer, but Elmer told me afterwards it was tough conditions. Tough conditions and a tough bite. Cold front, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, he said several people came up to him and said things like, hey, because of you, I've taken up skateboarding.
Elmer.
He got a lot of good, yeah. I mean, a lot of people he knew and didn't know, apparently. He recognized him and
Elmer's a star,
with his celebrity
baby.
Status. I thought that was pretty cool.
Jay, we haven't done the contest in a while. I've got the contest, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Highlander for a headlock. So here's the deal. I will buy you a headlock if you bring a broadsword or some kind of large sword, unsharpened. You can't bring a dangerous weapon to the Muskie Shop Bash. But you just walk up to Elmer Jensen and say, there can be only one. Elmer. Poor Elmer.
Yeah.
He will be.
I mean,
he'll, you know, Highlander for a headlock.
The guy's a miracle worker. I mean, you know, swordsman, skateboarding champion.
Stare down champion of
North America. Actually.
And the host of Pawpaw's Playhouse. The now defunct.
Speaking of that bash, Jody Michael wanted us to mention that RSVP feature that we added.
If you guys were trying to gauge how many people would be there, we've got tons of emails, but we added a thing on the front of muskyshop.com. Go to the website. There's a RSVP. Please RSVP to just let us gauge what the heck we're getting into here.
Yeah, we're trying to plan ahead with, you know, everything from food to chairs to, speaking of which, we're adding more of vendor tables.
Uh-huh.
You know, and some of these guys are big names, too. It sounds like Bruce Shumway's going to be there. He's a legend. I mean, we should try to get him up and do a quick little Talk-a-Mundo there on the stage.
I mean, you got some
look
cool
at the
stuff.
Speaker list. It's amazing.
Just look at it.
It's incredible.
Just
minus
look at
you,
it.
Of course.
Look at it, Jay.
Just imagine if we can get Cody Dalton.
Massive tracts of land. It, honest to God, is the most badass speaker lineup I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It really is. It's really funny. Yeah. Tell your friends. No, I mean, it should be cool. Are Lake X dudes going to be there?
He's trying, but he's got some conflict. We're hoping he can be. If not, maybe he's going to try to get like one of his pro staff guys that can work a table. Yeah, and show some of the new stuff. And
there'll be cool baits there, guys. Come out, have a good time. Tell your friends if they don't listen to the podcast. But do us a favor. Go over to themuskyshop.com and RSVP. The reason being, we know there's going to be a bunch of people there. We're trying to figure out the prize situation. So if you RSVP ahead of time, we're going to have more prizes. That's what we're working on because we need to let the people know that.
We are donating a ton of stuff, and we are getting donations from some awesome vendors. This stuff is coming in daily. We've got a lot of free raffles to give
away. Free raffles. I'm actually going to give away some trolling rods.
Hmm.
Yep. and some stuff. There's some stuff laying around in the bait cave and some funsies, and we're going to have a good time with it. But RSVP so we can prepare for the craziness that will be the bash. The other thing I want to say is this,
please,
Jay.
Please.
I need to let people know. In a previous life, I played guitar.
Right.
And so, on the 31st, Joe Bucher and the Top Raiders featuring Stephen Paul will be playing in St. Germain. Just throwing it out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, it'll be Joe Bucher and the Top Raiders featuring Stephen Paul will be playing Old Dude Blues. And we'll
That's going to be the last Saturday in July, and it's about 400 yards from my house.
Yep. You'll be like, and, turn that down.
I am going to try to be there. My family's coming up that day, and I'll try to bring them over. And
it'll be rocking.
You told me last night if I'm not there, you're going to kill me, so I'll do my best.
We'll do the live podcast from... That's the other thing, guys, is at the bash, so what we're planning on is this, is we will do a live podcast when the bash is done at like 5, so probably hopefully like 5:30. We'll try to do like a live Q&A of the podcast. We'll see how that goes.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, we'll have some fun with it. But I will be playing with the Top Raiders July 31st, St. Germain, Wisconsin. Are you ready to rock slowly?
I like big baits, and I cannot lie.
These other muskie can't deny. When a bait walks in with the itty-bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung. Anyway.
Wow.
Wow. Anyway, moving on. Mm-hmm. The Top Raiders, Joe Booker's Top Raiders with Stephen Paul, July 31st, St.
What
Germain,
kind of music
Wisconsin.
You guys going to be playing?
A lot of stuff from Slayer. I think the Top Raiders pretty much do the whole Raining Blood album front to back. And then, you know, some black metal.
Yep. Okay. Dark stuff.
Dark stuff.
Fast?
Fast and dark. And
does Joe shred like that?
Joe actually tunes his guitar to drop G. A lot of people don't know that. So he gents. Okay. He invented degent. You know, so if you like hits from Dimmu Borgir or, you know, Pantera, you know, Killswitch Engage, Joe plays them all.
Okay.
He plays them all. So, you know, we'll be playing a lot of that. And Albert Collins and some blues. But anyway.
Is there a costume involved with that? Or does he just straight up go?
Oh, he dresses as a demon pirate. Everybody knows that.
Okay. Get it. Okay.
Yeah, it's basically like, have you ever seen the band Gwar?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
pretty much Gwar. That's it. I mean, it's literally scary. Literally the band Gwar.
Okay.
So it is what it is, you know?
Didn't know Joe had it in him.
A lot of fake blood thrown on the audience. Like, it's Alice Cooper on crack. It's just violent. A lot of people don't know this. Joe bit the head off a northern pike on stage like Ozzy did a bat. So it gets pretty rough, but, you know.
School's out for summer, Steve.
Muskie school's out for summer. That's what we're opening up with. But it should be fun for the whole family. Bring them out. Anyway, one day. You got one day, Jay. You got a Saturday. You got a Sunday. You got a Tuesday. You got one day on the water. What's the game plan? Now, the questions this week, we got tons of questions about what do I do with, what do I do this, what do I do, blah, 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 blah. And I thought the best way to summarize a lot of these questions is, what's the one-day game plan, right? We've got one day on the water to put a muskie in the boat, right? It's obviously summer. We're coming into the friggin' mid-June. What do I do, right? So let's sort of riff for a second about the one-day game plan. First of all, if I don't know where I'm going to action water. First and foremost. Right?
Well, yeah, if you're out of your element, you're going to pick a lake.
You're out of your element, Donnie. Sorry.
Big Lebowski.
Big Lebowski. You're out of your element. So if you're out of your element, and you're flying blind, or you're, you know, you live in whatever. Let's say you live in Stevens Point and you're in Eagle River and it's your first time.
Yeah, you're on vacation. Yeah, you're going to go somewhere outside your area. Gotcha.
You watch some old videos and you saw the Rodfather and the Big Fib say go to the North Woods. You're coming from Chicago. You're going up there and you go, where do I go?
Mm-hmm.
Action water. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, if that's your thing, unless you're truly trophy fishing. But
one day. We got one day.
One day you want to catch some fish. Right. Absolutely. You got to do some research and figure out, like around here in northern Wisconsin, there's a couple thousand lakes in this 2-county region.
Right.
That have muskies in them. So it's like, ask some people, look online,
call the shop,
get a good area book that, about musky waters, mm-hmm. and read up, do your homework.
Number one, weed out those lakes that have low numbers. You just hit the daily double, which is do your homework. You don't want to have one day on the water and you're stuck on Lake Succotoban.
Yep.
Right? So do your homework. Call the muskie shop, ask to talk to Elmer or Al Frost or Jim or John.
Matt Dassau.
And talk to these guys and go, where's a bite? Right? They'll tell you. Do your homework first before you even step foot. Okay? Mm-hmm. So we've figured out stage one. We have the clue of one or two bodies of water because, like I said, there's low density water where you could spend a week and chase a 4-footer, but you could spend the week and you don't have the time, right? Because the wife wants to take you to Paul Bunyan's Pancake Factory tomorrow or whatever. The kids got to go to the goat pit and zoo.
Well, the Aquabats are performing at 6 p.m. sharp.
Exactly. And the wife's like, I will divorce you if you're not there for the Aquabats. Mm-hmm. I've been dreaming of this for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you be out there chasing those fish. We got limited time. Action water. The way you find out where to be is homework. There's enough knowledge out there. The other things you need to consider are a quick read on weather and water, right?
Weather and water.
Okay. Weather and water.
Mm-hmm.
Is this tannic? Is it clear? Let's say you call up to the shop and Al Frost says you need to hit this and it's a clear body of water. Okay, so we're dealing with clear water and we're dealing with a cold front. It might be low and slow. Or if we got tannic water and it's a cold front, it's a little bit different of a ball game. Again, consult some of the experts right in the podcast. We're happy to help you. But you've got to read that water quickly. You don't have a week to get dialed in. You got a day. And I'm trying to think of the thing that we get so much is people say, I fish the weekends. You got a day. You got a day and a half. Find that body of water that's got density and then get a read. The way that you get a read on it is you're looking at that weather beforehand. Don't go out there and get blindsided and open your phone and look at the weather the day of and go, today is. Conceptualize what's been going on, right? Is it the first day of a cold front, the second day of a cold front, the third day? Is it prefrontal, postfrontal? Be watching leading up to your fishing day, whether it's a guide trip, whether you just got a couple days on the water or a single day on the water. Watch the weather leading up to so you have a better read on the water before you get out there. Makes sense?
Yep.
Yep. Go ahead.
I mean, yeah, don't hesitate to give us a call. I mean, someone came in, actually it was a couple guys, came in Friday, and they told me where they were going, general area. Like they were staying around Boulder Junction, I remember. And I said, try this lake. And fished mm-hmm. the left side of this lake, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Picked out some general spots. It's like if you go up there, if you haven't, fished it before, it sounded like they had not fished any lakes around there before. And they came in, what's today? I think they came in yesterday. And they got a couple fish. So
nice.
Who knows? They might have picked the wrong lake. There's so many of them in that area.
Right. But nonetheless.
Yeah, not had anything to show for it, but, they were happy, and made me feel good anytime you hear that. Catch fish. Give me a call. It's like I got a short list of lakes in this area, like Steve was talking about, some clear, some tannic,
mm-hmm.
that are definitely in the more – sometimes guys are like, I don't want to name names and diss any lakes, but you know, they'll specifically go, what about this lake? And you know, I'm like, you know what? There's a lake, two lakes to the west of there. Have you tried that?
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend trying that over this lake. I think you'll have better action.
Some of the lakes up there, or anywhere, it doesn't matter if you're in Wisconsin or wherever you're at, some of these bodies of water have a learning curve.
Well, without question.
Right? So there's a big curve of like, whoa, you're not going to go out there in a day. You might get lucky, but in general, they're tough bodies of water. That's, again, we're falling in the Hallmark thing. The other thing I'd say to just sort of summarize, you know what? I'm going to break. You just said people come into the store. I need you to tell everybody who came into the store today, Jay.
Famous politician.
That was sort of funny. I woke up this morning to a picture of who?
Paul Ryan,
former Speaker of the House. Paul Ryan is a muskie fisherman, folks. It was pretty fantastic. Jay got a pic with him.
Yeah, he was just the nicest person ever. Yeah, it was,
how cool is that?
I wasn't even sure if it was him. I'm like, I didn't know what to say. You know, right. It's like, hi, are you Paul? And he's like, yeah, Paul Ryan. I'm like, nice to meet you. And I'm like, yeah, what are you doing? Oh. He's like, you know, I'm doing this now, and you know, I'm semi-retired. And anyway, got a nice selfie with him. He's a very nice guy, and he was heading out muskie fishing.
Muskie like, no shop, kidding. Home, very of the, cool. Home of the stars.
Yeah.
Home of the stars. So I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah. You're like, Paul Ryan. Well, Paul Ryan, shout out to you. Hope you got a big one, man. Anyway.
Usually it's more like retired sports guys, right. You know. Rather than really, really well-known politicians, right. You know, it's usually like, we've had some, you know, quarterbacks in the NFL,
right.
Ex-NFL quarterbacks have come in now and then, and, right. You know, stuff like that. So it was neat, you know, but normally you don't recognize them. I didn't even know that was him. And one of the employees said, hey, I think that's Paul Ryan up there. I'm like, are you kidding me?
Paul Ryan. You know,
anyway,
what are you going to do? Fun stuff. You know, it's musky shop where the stars hang. So anyway, back to the 1 day game plan, just trying to give you a general concept, folks. The other thing I would do in just a generality here is lay out all the classes of baits right now. Musky shop for guys that are looking for a 1 day game plan or just a thought process. There's the new thing. There's the 6-pack of lures, which is great because it sort of covers jerk bait, dive and rise, you know, deep diving bait, top water. You know, if you're a 1-dayer or you got limited time, having that 6-pack of baits ready to go is a great thought process. You want to throw them all. You might not know. You're not going to know this is bucktailish. If you have limited time on the water, you're not going to know. You need to have at least all the bait classes covered and ready to go, right? So if you've got some baits, have them out, ready to go, and you force yourself to go, I'm going to throw diving rise, I'm going to throw topwater, I'm going to throw blades, I'm going to throw rubber, I'm going to throw a glide bait, and keep rotating through those baits during the course of that day until you hit something, right? You know, if you've got limited time, that means you got limited knowledge. This means you have a limited read on the water. Make sure you're rotating through baits. Don't walk out there and go, all right, I'm going to throw a bucktail until I catch a fish.
I agree.
Right?
I agree not to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Do not do that. Yeah. I mean,
because you know, I've had luck on this lure before.
Right.
Maybe even on this body of water. This is a good color for this this particular lake or this particular you know, region. And not always the case. Like Pete Mena said in an upcoming video that we got coming in a few weeks, he was talking about you remember that part when you guys caught a fish and then Pete like interjects and he's holding that, he's holding up the lure he was throwing, that Livingston Viper, by the way, which we just got in today. We got those things.
That's a cool bait.
Cool swim bait. And he's talking about the one thing that he sees a lot is guys did well with a particular lure.
Yeah.
They caught muskies on it the day before. He goes, never, never, never. Start out the day with both guys throwing that bait because it worked yesterday.
No.
That is the opposite of what you want to do.
Right. what we did, what happened yesterday is not what's happening now.
You have to find, exactly. That was just, that's the past.
Mm-hmm. You've got to go through the tackle box. Have them laid out. Have that spread of lures, your different classes of lures ready to go. And speaking of, you know, and that's just the basics on that. Speaking of, the new episode of Musky Shop TV is out. It is Slammer Musky Hammer.
Yeah, that's a nice video, Steve. Yeah, you got a nice one. You got that net. Oh, man. Upper 40 incher solo net job.
Solo net
juggling job. The net and the rod and a big musky.
If you want to know how to solo net a fish, that's not a bad one. Just sort of, I didn't think, we didn't talk about it in the video, but it's just sort of how I do it. The net's there by my side, it's under my arm. That brings up an interesting thing, which is nets. I was talking to Cody Dalton.
Okay.
Just scared yesterday, I know. He scares everybody. Don't look him in the eyes. I was talking to him, and we were talking about nets and talking about how much these things weigh. I'm a convert. I'm going to pick one up at the musky shop, is the clam net.
Clam, I thought you were going to say that. Those are really nice.
And everybody's like, clam net, it's stupid, it's round. What is the strongest geometrical shape, Jay?
Round. I thought you were gonna go to octagon, but I'm like, well, you know, I better go
dodecahedron. So, anyway,
yeah, those clam nets are, well, they're new. I don't care if you think clam nets are great or they're not great because of something like in the past. This is a completely new redesign. They just came out.
Old Mr. Mana told me when we were fishing together, he's like, he designed the bag on that. I'm sitting here going, why don't you guys tell everybody you designed the bag? Pete is like the biggest conservationist in the sport. That net, what's cool about that net is you can't get hooks stuck in it. So I am a clam. I will be rocking a clam from when the time I get up there. I'm going to walk into the musky shop and buy one of those things. And I'm going to rock the clam because it's a really good netting and it's a lighter net. That's the one thing is if you're solo netting, you need a light net. That is the light net. A lot of the newer nets that are coming out, guys are like, I built the strongest musky net ever. I built it out of stainless steel. Okay. The thing weighs 47 pounds, you know?
Yeah, so, that's not something you have to worry about. It's the strength of the net. Right. I'm talking about modern musky nets. That's not an issue. I've never seen one break.
Well,
don't worry about that.
I can cover you on that.
A lot of it has to do with the overall size, bag depth, width, you know, target width of the actual frame.
Jay, on a scale of 1 to 5, what's your bag depth?
Well, I'll talk about musky net bag net. I mean, if you're in the 42 to 48 inch range and people are like, whoa, that's not big enough for the muskies I catch.
Get the Colossus.
Sure it is. That's the bag depth.
What's your, folks?
Doesn't mean 50 inch fish aren't going to fit in a 42 inch bag depth. So that's, you know, you got the size and the fish is always curved. So,
you know,
plenty of room. For hogs.
Pete brought down, the Colossus or like their biggest bag.
Yeah, the big musky.
Big. Yep. That thing was ridiculously huge. You could fit like four people and their best friends in there. That's a cool net. I'm just throwing it out there. I've been running a Frable Conservation for a long time. I've actually replaced the handle on it like 3 times, so it's time for a new net. So I'm going to go with the clam.
Cool.
Jam it in the clam. That's what they say, folks.
Good stuff.
Speaking of good stuff cheap, it's not that expensive either. So a lot of people ask about nets. That's where I'm going. It's clam. The other one I like though, I do like that Frable, the Stowmaster, but you got to watch the netting on that. You know, if you're going to fish a bunch, you need to watch because that netting can tear a little bit. Anyway, Jay, what's new? You got anything new at the shop?
Well, yeah, today it was the Livingston Viper 6s and Viper 8s.
Viper.
That is a jointed swim bait and, looks good. After seeing Pete use that on video, I'm like,
A cool bait. It's not hard to work. You can straight retrieve it. You can work it like a glide bait, which is a great Little Bait. Also, too, if you haven't heard the word, bird. We've got the Lynchum Baits in. What else we got? Hot Tails. A lot of cool stuff at the shop.
A lot more custom Phantoms coming in. We got another custom color coming in Friday or something from Phantom.
We got the baddest customs there is. Lynchum, baby.
How about that cool Slammer 7-inch that you were using in the video that came out yesterday?
Pretty rocking.
Hot Cisco color. That's
hot
a custom.
Cisco. That's actually, that color is bad.
That is a musky producer. How many fish you caught on that? I mean, in the last month?
Enough.
Like three or four or something. Yeah. I mean,
maybe more. That's a really good bait. Yeah, that bait. That orange belly. I like that, you know. I mean, low light.
You know, Joe Booker's always been kind of an orange belly guy. I remember him talking about and why is that? Why is an
orange belly?
It just
stands out. I mean, what gets me, and what I was going to say is, like, that is an early morning, late in the evening, or just on the cusp of low light.
Okay.
If you're standing on the boat and the light is starting to dim and you look at your baits and you go, whoa. Those orange baits, like, really stand out in low light conditions. You know, your chartreuse and your orange stuff go, it just pops. I mean, visually out of the water, and you go, that's got to have more pop in the water. It's got to stand out just a hair more. You know, is that a natural presentation? Maybe not. But if you're in the right conditions and those fish are looking for bait, man, they're going to come a distance for it. You know, and it's just like in that Slammer video we just put out. That fish, what you don't see in that, I moved it earlier. So you see me, I'm hammering that area. And it comes in and it nips in the eight and it finally commits on the front side of the boat. Right? So that fish was being a little persnickety. It had moved actually on the sucker collared Slammer just about 15 minutes before.
Cool.
And so I switched it up to that orange belly and I went, pfft. Well, it like that, maybe a collar change will do it.
Uh-huh.
And it seemed like it's one of these rare instances. The lighting was right. I'd thrown the sucker back at the same spot. The fish hadn't moved. And I said, well, I'm out of ideas. Let me put this on. Threw it, and it came in, and it was not committal. If you watch that video, I do a pretty decent eight. You can see I see the fish. It nips at it, and I go around the nose of the boat, and it finally takes it at the very end. So that was one of those things where just something slightly different mattered. And I like orange bellies. I mean, there's places in Canada where it's just like, okay, it is orange, and that's all I want. So that's something to consider there.
Yeah, there's something about, you know, musky fishing is always like not necessarily matching the hatch with colors. With bait size, overall size and all that, maybe matching has a lot more to do with it. But, I mean, I'm just talking color patterns.
Yeah.
You look at how often, I mean, this color that you're throwing is, I mean, far from natural because it's got, like, a bright blue back.
Mm-hmm.
And like, white into orange and something like that.
It's
hot Cisco. Yeah, so.
I'll say this because you're talking about Booker with the orange bellies. I'll say that. The two color preferences I've ever seen that mattered, right? And I'm not even talking that fish in the video. I'm talking just in general, like we're on a trip and you go, whoa, I got to be throwing this color. Is orange belly or orange accent, whether it's orange accent on a bucktail or orange belly on a crankbait, or white belly. And me and Booker had a trip where a white belly perch, that was it. You could throw something with a hot belly and they didn't want it to be, it had to have a white belly. So, you know, those are the two belly colors on a bait I look for when I'm buying a bait. Okay. Orange, white, you know, just a little different. It's not something I'm pulling out all the time, but when you need it, you got it. That's just my thought there.
Yeah.
You know, side collar, whatever. Belly collar, that's where it's at. Preston says, please use old Greg in a video. That would be awesome. You got to use the fuzzy little man peach line, though. LOL. We got so many emails about, I'm old Greg.
Oh, man, I almost forgot about that. How soon you forget. Oh, that's terrible.
What are you doing fishing my waters, boy?
Yeah, I'm just the overall concept of getting Elmer as old Greg and putting seaweed in his helmet.
It's gonna happen.
His face. No, oh, no. Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
It's gonna happen. Heck, I'll do it. I don't care. We're doing it. Somebody's dressing up as old Greg. We got so many emails. Jay, do you love me? Make an assessment. Tony Pieces. Make an assessment.
Yeah, well, you're coming up to Northern Wisconsin in mid-July, so we've got a few weeks here. We've got a tight schedule, but...
Somebody's dressing up as old Greg, by God. It's happening.
We're going to have to make some of this stuff happen. Yeah,
I'm old Greg! Folks, I apologize, but God, we love the jokes. Tony P., do you ever use spoons trolling? Trolling spoons? If so, when, where, why, and what times of year would you use them? Tony continues, says, do you love me? Make an assessment. yes.
Trolling spoons, absolutely.
Spoons. Okay. Spoons to me are, I don't want to say an afterthought or a last ditch thing, but spoons are a winter presentation in with what I'm doing. Now, one thing that I love, I haven't seen anybody do it in forever. I do it. But it's old school. I believe they call it the Burger King rig. I don't know why they call it that. But that was taking a frigging Believer or Swim With, taking the back hook off, putting 4 feet a leader behind it with a spoon. Okay? That is a legit rig. That is old school, and I actually run that. So I will use a crankbait to achieve depth for my spoon and just take the back hook off and run the spoon behind the crankbait to get even bigger action out of it. So if you want to take a depth rater and take the rear hook off, or take all the hooks off if you want. I usually, when I do this, it has to be deep fish and they got to be sort of eh. I'll take a depth rater. I'll take the back hook off and I'll attach a leader with a clip and run 4 feet of multi-strand wire back and another clip with a swivel and put a spoon on that and it is dynamite.
How big a spoon are you putting on that thing?
One of the standard, like, you know, the palm of your hand size daredevils or daredevils.
Like a one ounce traditional size, yeah. Daredevil kind of deal. Okay.
I'm not going crazy with like this Gondo giant spoon, but using crankbaits as a downrigger for spoons is silly good.
That's cool.
And the thing is this, if you look at a spoon on a downrigger, well, it's running, but now you've got the kick of the crankbait making that spoon do even crazier stuff. That is, if you want a ninja trick, okay, that is also a ninja trick. I shouldn't even say this. That is a super ninja trick for blades. So, let's say I want to run double eights. I take a 4 foot leader and a depth rater and I put the blades off the back of the depth rater. Now I don't have to turn the boat. The depth rater's wobbling, making the blades go side to side and giving a walk from the resistance. And now you've got double eights running 7 feet down behind the boat and you just have to drive the boat straight and the depth rater's walking that bait enough to make it go side to side a little bit and you're going to trigger strikes.
That's crazy.
Okay. You can do that with Believers, Depth Raiders, and Cisco kits.
Pretty easy to rig that up, too. It wouldn't take that long.
I just gave away probably the most ninja secret of the podcast.
Huh.
Okay? So I'll walk you through it again. Straight 8-inch depth raider, not jointed, straight. Take the rear hook off, clip a leader to one end. What I do is I make a 48-inch leader. And so I clip it onto where the hook hanger is for that back hook. Then I put a set of MEPS double eights or an Eagle Tail or a Cowgirl or RJs or there's so many friggin' blades, it doesn't matter. Put that on the back. And then I use the depth rater to achieve the depth that I want and the blades run behind it. It gets rid of blade lift and alleviates the fact of me needing to run downriggers. So it's a bigger action for the blades, no downriggers necessary, and now you got trolling depth control. Like I said, depth raters, you know, we're struggling past 8 or 10, but you can get there. The blades create a little bit of lift, but when you get it down, you can get it down. The same thing can be said, super shad wraps. You can put a super shad wrap behind a depth rater. So super shad wraps don't run that deep, but you put a depth rater, a Cisco kids want to run a little bit deeper, connect that to the rear of the bait. Sometimes you'll pick the fish up on the Cisco kid. Sometimes you'll pick it up on the, you know, shad wrap that's behind it.
I was just going to ask, yeah, what's the percentage of which bait are they hitting when you've got a spoon or a bucktail behind the crankbait?
I'll say this. When I'm using the crankbait, and this is, I'm sick that I even brought it up. I don't know why I'm running my mouth. However, I will use Cisco kids, depth raters as those pseudo downriggers for smaller presentations that I need to get deep or slower. So in general, they're going to hit the smaller presentation, right? However, that 8-inch or 9-inch, how big is this, the Husky Cisco kid? We say it's 8, just about 8, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah, it's right.
Okay. That's going to get down there and give it wobble and walk. However, you know, that is usually, if I'm in that position where I need to get those baits down and dirty, they're going to go for the smaller of the two. The other thing you may have read me talking about was using dipsy divers to get smaller cranks down there. I still like using dipsies, but I like using the crankbaits for the bigger action anymore. I've sort of changed my tune. Another super combo is a Husky Cisco Kid, back hook removed, with a small Jake behind it. Now, wow. what you've got to look out for is hooks. Let's say I'm on a body of water where one line can have X amount of hooks. Sometimes you have to take all the hooks off the Cisco kid, and it's just a downrigger. Well, that's way easier than carrying around a downrigger. Okay. Little bit easier to pull, easier on your rod, so you just put the Cisco kid down there with all the hooks taken off of it, and you run your little 6-inch, 5-inch Jake behind it, and you're good to go.
That is pretty cool.
Okay. So you go off the dive curve. The best I can come up with this, and I'll tell you this, is I'm going off the dive curve of the Cisco kid, and I'll usually call it +1. Because you're going to go, well, how deep is it running? Well, we got the chart on the app for the Cisco Kid and the Depth Rater, but you can go, I usually go that +1. So I got 4 feet of line extra off the back of the bait. But I'll tell you, it's devastating. The same thing can be done. You talk about this. This is another hot one. I'm telling you guys stuff that is bad to the bone. Depth Rater with a JB Rattler behind it. You want to talk about a spring downsize presentation or negative neutral fish, use the depth rater to get the depth, put the JB Rattler or the Lungeon Rattler or you know, any rattle trap behind that. Now you got a deep running rattle trap that you control at any speed. And now you got the JB Rattler kicking around. The one thing I'd say is this, I do use, it's rare that I use a swivel, but I'll use a swivel to sort of minimize the herky-jerky action of the crankbaits. But you can do some interesting pairings to get these smaller presentations to run deep. Another thing that could be said is Cisco kids with Aglias, right? So you want to get a small little bait down there, 500 Booker tails behind crankbaits. And so use your crankbaits as downriggers so you know where they're running, and usually the blades will just run right behind them, right? So if you put, let's say I need to troll something deep as far as a blade, I'm going to take a slop master and a depth rater, straight sucker depth rater, whatever straight depth rater. And let's say I'm on a lake that's 3 hooks per line, right? Mm-hmm. Or presentation. Yeah. Well, if I've got a single hook slop master and I take the back hook off a depth rater, I'm good, right? Pretty much as I read any regs. So I'll have the slop master running behind the depth rater. It's going to make it run a little bit different, but you can get it done, and you can augment that to get some of these presentations running down where you need to be. It's not an exact science. The bait's going to run different than it would in any other circumstance, but it's a cheap downrigger, quick way to do it and really get where you want to be.
Really putting out some really different sound and vibration too.
Oh yeah.
With and those two things going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. In different zones.
Mm-hmm. And like
I don't know, just really mixing things up.
you know, and what I will do is, and I'm just telling you ninja trick stuff here, I will run about a 12-inch leader in front of like the crankbait or the deep diving crankbait, just so at that point, if I'm trying to land a fish, I can reel right up to that leader, and then I've got that bait, and then I've got a 48-inch leader. So I'm dealing with 5 feet of line there, which is not that bad compared to a lot of trolling leaders. But if you've got to get down there and you've got to do something different and you want to run spoons in a way that these fish never see and you want to trigger strikes, that's the way to run spoons. Boom. Thank you. Good night.
Pretty cool.
That's it. Anyway, Heath, Jay, Steve, I'm seeing fish consistently. They're coming into the eight, but I can't catch the darn things. Even the ones that feel more aggressive. He said, I've listened, watched, and tried everything. I'm surprised, you know, the work hasn't, you know, he says, I'm surprised work hasn't blocked my computer from all the videos and research I've been doing. I fish a river and has quite a bit of pressure. I spend some days just working on the first 25% of the casts, you know, and into the eight and focusing on that. He said, I can't figure out what I'm doing wrong. Any tips, tricks, or advice without reverting to dynamite?
Well, he says he's tried everything, but I mean, the one trick would be, you know, is going down. You know, we've talked about this mm-hmm. before. It's just like if you're getting follows on an 8-inch bait, if go down to a 7 or a 6.
Downsize your baits. Yep.
Down, yep.
Absolutely.
Time of day. I mean, if he's going out there at noon every day because that's when he's able to fish and it's pressured water, that's right. A tough ball game.
Right. So you got to focus on what's going to make the most sense as far as is time of day. But let's say, for argument's sake, Heath is fishing prime times, or he's fishing all day long, and this is just a current occurrence that's happening the whole time. What am I doing wrong? Okay. Self-critique. The best thing I can say, if I'm seeing fish and they're coming into the eight and I'm not catching them, right? The best way mm-hmm. to correct that is go get a GoPro. Right? One GoPro shooting at you, and you go every, and I'm just saying, Heath didn't say he's doing this, but I'm making crap up on the fly.
Okay.
Let's say Heath is doing this, and every time he comes into the eight, he does a real lousy right turn. His left turns are great, but his right turns are crap.
It's not wide enough. It's not right. You're slowing down or something right. like that. You'll detect something you're doing incorrectly. Right.
Self-correct, first and foremost. It doesn't have to be 4K. It doesn't have to be beautiful. Get a cheap one and put it on loop, whatever. I would do that so you can see what you're doing. In the moment, what I would do is keep them down. Now, I can't say how deep the river is. I can't say how, let's say it's 5 feet down. And that's bottom. Keep them as deep as you can and bring them up. Big loping roller coaster turns. Okay. One thing I see in the eight, especially this time of year, is you have to ramp the speeds up. So I'll give you a couple things just to correct that you might not be able to tell from videos. When you first come into the figure eight, do not slow down from where you're reeling. So don't slow down because you see the fish. People innately speed up too much, however, because of adrenaline. Try to keep it even from your cast. If he doesn't eat in the first figure eight, speed up from there, right? Never slow down. Speed up when we get to number two. If he doesn't eat in the fast one, slow down. And then halfway through, speed it up. Self-critique and watch your video or watch yourself do this and go, does it look like, and there's nobody better than Joe. Does my figure eight look like Joe Booker's? Okay. If your figure eight looks like Joe Booker's and you're executing it flawlessly every time, your mechanics are perfect, then the fish aren't eating and you need to keep downsizing. In general, you can find some flaw. That's the one thing that drives me nuts doing these videos with the Muskie Shop. There are so many flaws in my game that I still find by watching this. You might see it. You might not. I see it. And I go, oh my God, how did I even catch that fish? What's wrong with me? Right? There's always room for improvement. And this is more general than what Heath is asking. But as musky fishermen, we always need to self-critique. So often do we blame they're not biting on the fish. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And often at times we're not executing. Right? So is it they're not biting or I'm not executing? When it comes to figure eight, matters of figure eight, execution is often the case. I don't believe that too many muskies are coming out and wasting calories in some curious effort. I know there are some curious follows, but in general, a muskie is going to engage because he is turned on. You've turned on something in his brain and he wants to eat something. Right? So watch a video of yourself. Film it on, you can get a GoPro 3 off eBay for $40. Film yourself fishing for a day and go, that's what I'm doing wrong. Right? I've learned more filming the Muskie Shop TV show that I need to fix than I've seen that I need to do again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's a lot of fish I caught where I go, how did I catch that thing? That thing's dumber than hell. Right? I'm always striving for perfection. The most perfect figure eight game I've ever seen, I've witnessed it with my own two eyes. I've stood there on the boat. I've seen it 1,000 times at Booker. That's what I strive for. I'm nowhere near it, but that's what you need to watch. You go, okay, it's executed perfectly every time. There's not a flaw in it. Yeah, you guys are going, well, I watch him do Lazy J sometimes. Yeah, sometimes he does. When it comes to catching one in the eight and he knows there's a fish there, it's wide, it's loping, it's up and down. It's got this banked race car thing to it, and it's good. Yeah, so yeah. Self-critique. Heath, if you feel like the mechanics are good, what I would look at is the downsizing presentations, right? The other thing is this. I find myself at times not triggering the strike on the cast enough, right? So mix it up on the cast before we even get to the eight. Let's say we're throwing bucks or slammers or, you know, what would be appropriate for this time of year is mid-sized cranks, double eights, 500s. You know, give that fish a mid-cast trigger. Give him a reason to hit before he gets to the eight.
Give him a reason to hit before he gets to the eight. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
To me, I'll say this, and this has nothing to do with Heath, but this is just in general. If a fish has made it boat side, I've done something wrong. I hate to say that. I think that way all the time. I didn't trigger him on the cast. The goal should be they eat on every cast.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I had 60 feet to get that fish to eat. And now we're boat side. I should be.
Yeah, that's a good mindset to have.
Right. And it's just, I'm pushing myself all the time. You know, I'm pushing for this. I find myself continually pushing for non-existent perfection. Doesn't exist. But you got to have a goal and you go, I should never catch a figure eight fish. If you are the most mechanically sound, perfect, you read the water perfect, you read the conditions perfect, you read the speed of retrieve and what they wanted every day perfectly, they would eat on the cast. No one's ever done it. No one will ever do it. But that should be the goal. Right? So a figure eight is not a matter of failure by any means. But you've not done anything right up until that point. We moved him. We haven't caught him. And that's what I'm always looking at is like, what can I do on the cast? So another factor would be, is my retrieve boring and I'm just bringing in fish that are at 50%. And now you have 50% to overcome boat side. That's the other way to look at it. That's how I beat the crap out of myself. People that have been on my boat, you know it. I'm beating myself to death. And that's the thought is, what level is he at? Did I get him engaged enough that he's going to eat in the first turn? Right? Anytime they open their mouth and they hit is a win, but be thinking about getting one on the cast. What can you do during the cast to get that fish to eat long before he's at boat side? So
yeah, that first half of the cast,
critical.
You're doing something, whether it's
a triggering property.
It's pausing. Yeah. Some kind of trick, either a surge or a serious pause and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Mix it up.
Yep. You know, that's the trick. That it almost goes to this next question. Jim, I was throwing blades and looked down to see a nice 45-incher or so muskie up behind me. She was bumping the bait, so I sped up, and so did she. Went to the figure eight, but she stopped 3 feet back and 3 feet down and just stared at me. She said, I think she was laughing. I just hung that bait off the side, and she continued to look up at me. You know, and he said, I'm paraphrasing, but like, you know, this fish is laughing at me. I'm wondering why I'm fishing muskies. What could I have done better? Same kind of thing. Let's get her before she gets to the boat. Right? The best piece of advice I've heard in muskie fishing flatly was Pete Stoltzman in one muskie shop video. I'm talking years ago. He said, pretend a muskie's behind your bait every cast. And he said, once you lose that thread, you need to take a break. Once you lose that thread, once you stop doing that, it's time for a break. Okay. You need to mentally regroup. Too often we get into zombie mode. Right? I'll tell you, I see it all the time guiding. The first 50 casts of any guide client or anybody on the water is just amazing. They're focused and they are poised.
Yep. Everything's fresh in their mind. They're trying to do this. They remember what they've been practicing in their head.
Mm-hmm.
All these tips and tactics that they want to try to execute. You know, your energy's fresh. And then after that first 45 minutes, it's all downhill unless they're really active that day.
Right.
And then it becomes lazy. I mean, we all do that. I mean,
you were talking about
getting sloppy on your present executions and presentations and all that, you know, through your, you know, self-critiquing. And it's like, if you're talking about hours of doing basically the same thing. Maybe you're changing up baits, so there's a little bit of, you know, different type of retrieve method going on there. But basically, you're doing the same thing. It's going to get lazy. It will.
And that's the thing is, we're on a whole different tip now. What I think is intriguing about muskie fishing, right, is not catching the fish. It's overcoming your innate human nature.
Hmm.
Okay, let's get really weird here for a second. As humans, we have very short attention spans. We can't focus on singular things for too long, right?
What's that?
We can't, exactly. well played. But we struggle with attention span, right?
Yeah.
Okay, you can't focus on this for so long. But you can if you turn your brain off. There is a zen-like muskie state where you're not thinking about, and that's what the joy of the sport is. If you can hit that level where you go, I'm not thinking about catching fish. I'm thinking about doing all the things in and around catching fish. Okay? If you focus on the presentation and a great presentation the entire time, it's going to happen. It's an inevitability. When you're sitting there staring at squirrels and your phone's ringing, and people are calling you, and people are texting you.
Emails are going off, right. And the phone's going bleep, 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 and absolutely distraction left and right. It's
mental fitness, and the way you catch muskies is the war of attrition, as Booker says, and bearing down and focusing on the moment. You know, if you look at, I'm going to get real weird for a second. If you look at our society as a whole right now, we do not focus on the moment. We live in some pseudo timeline of smartphones, and we live in some pseudo timeline of email and crap. Not that second. It's a world of distraction, right? If you can live in your own head for 8 hours and just go, I am staring at this bait, and every time this bait comes back to the boat, it is going to be as perfect as I can feasibly make it, and shut the rest of your brain off, you're going to catch a lot of fish. That's it. I mean, I hate to say that. Like, I could do a 4-hour podcast on the mental game of musky fishing, which is not the act of musky fishing, which is just the mental game of transcendence and the mental game of being in the moment. And as our society continues to go on, no one's in the moment. All right? That is like the peak of, like, you look at some cultures, you look at some religions, it is Buddhism or whatever, you're in the moment. You live in the now. Don't live in the next cast. Don't live in the, I don't want to get skunked. Don't live in the, this morning was bad. Don't live in yesterday, I didn't catch a fish. Live in that cast. That is the most ridiculous shit I've ever said on the podcast, but that's how I really think. The last cast didn't matter. The next cast doesn't matter. I'm making this cast. I live now. I think about now. I'm not thinking about the squirrel in the tree. I'm not thinking about I've got to be at the dock by 6. I am just shut my brain off, and I am in the Zen state that is living in the moment and focusing on now. You will get your ass kicked every day when you focus on what's going to happen next. That's mm-hmm. what I think is the joy of the sport, is because it's enough to shut my brain off. And that's where you want to be, because, my God, if you have a day where you're just focused on the very moment you're living in, that's a hell of a better day to get skunked on than the day you're sitting out there worried about your taxes and how many people have emailed and texted you.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds ridiculous.
Well, you know what Joe does? He's got a secret tip. You probably don't know this. He doesn't actually shut off his phone when he musky fishes. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going out. I'm not talking about going out recreational, just rod right. bending trip, you know, going out right. trying to get some, because he's been doing some of that stuff for fun on the river,
right?
You know, and he's catching pike and he's catching bass and bowfin and dogfish, stuff like that. When he's musky fishing and he's in the moment, he takes his phone. He has a special app, and it's called All Emoji. He deselects that. It deselects all emoji action, and he is free and clear.
Yeah.
To concentrate.
It just
I'm making this up every, as I go.
No, it just texts emojis to anybody. turn your brain. Hey, listen, I'm off on a tangent here. Turn your brain off and turn your phone off and enjoy where you're at that very second.
Yeah. If you can stand turning your phone off for a while, watch how things change for you.
Absolutely.
I can't say I can do that, but
it's tough.
You know what? I'm going to try that this summer when the family's up.
All right. Trey says, what are some general tips for fishing small kayakable rivers? That's an interesting. Kayakable
bodies of water?
Kayakable. Anyway, first and foremost is be set up so you're not going to tip over. That's number one. I fished some kayak bodies of water, and you don't want to get a big one and be tore up on that thing. Tips in that, I would still have some kind of small fish finder. Not for finding fish, but for seeing water temps to understand what you're fishing. Other tips there are, I mean, if I'm musky fishing, I prefer to be in a stand-up kayak. I know it's not always the case, but you're going to forego a lot of figure eight action there. So just long rod so you can keep them away from the boat, and just keep your drag a little bit lighter so you're not get tipped over. A small, like,
because if you're not able to stand up, I mean, you're not even going to see half the fish.
Mm-hmm. So you got to really be watching. It's going to be a little bit harder to pattern. Like I said, a little hummingbird piranha or max, or, you know, it's like $100 would be worth it there. And I've seen guys that will use like these outrigger floater things to stabilize their kayak, because, I mean, if you get a 4-footer up and hit you boat side before you pull that thing out in a kayak, it's going to be ugly. So
It depends on the setup of the kayak. Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff they're making now is unbelievable.
Right. So, you know it's
very extravagant.
It's such a big sport, but I would have that stuff going on. As far as tips, fishing the same stuff everybody else is fishing, but just have yourself set up, preferably be able to stand up so you can see if a fish is coming and you got a chance on a figure eight. Last one. We got time for one more. Bob. Mm-hmm. Bob says, I invested in a Fishhawk TD temperature gauge for this summer. Thanks, Musky Shop. Thank you, Bob. said a tactic I'm considering for late this summer is finding the depth of water where the muskie's comfort zone is and trying to look for mid-lake structure that touches that depth or close to it. Of course, I'm planning to be careful with the wide variations in temperature or pressure that may harm the fish when I bring them up to the surface. What are your thoughts on this tactic? It's a great tactic. Like, if you're running, like, deep and it's like, obviously, he's mitigating that in his email saying, you know, I'm not going to bring them up to super high temps. Don't worry about it. I mean, you know, you don't want to bring a fish out of, like, 40 feet of water, but if he's 15, 20 feet down, it's no issue. It is a super solid tactic for finding where the fish are hanging, especially if you're dealing with thermoclines, you're dealing with sort of that, looking for that sweet spot in temperature zone.
Yeah, and if you can find some great, he's mentioned mid-lake structure. If you can find some great mid-lake structure, you're eliminating a lot of the spots that, you know, people are overlooking, you know. I mean, so many anglers go out and they're pounding shorelines only, you know.
Right, and so using that fish hawk to understand those subsurface temperatures are huge because you can sort of find that sweet spot in the water column where the muskies are most comfortable and target your trolling depths there.
Yeah.
If I'm thinking fish hawk, I'm thinking trolling, and I'm going to go, okay, it's whatever, it's 64 degrees at this depth, or it's 71 or it's 72. I at least have a target zone, right? Use that as a tool to help narrow your scope of search. You know, and if we're coming over those mid-lake humps or we're coming over rock piles or whatever we're targeting, you can use that temperature gauge to go, okay, I'm going to run everything from 8 to 12, right? But don't use that temperature as a sole target for your presentation zone. But use it as a focal point. So let's say you find a sweet spot of 72 degrees at 6 feet down. Well, I would still run something shallow and then run something beneath that, but you have a better target zone and, as far as a trolling setup. In a casting scenario, I don't know if it's going to be incredibly helpful, but it'll at least let you have a starting point for your running depths. So use that tool in that aspect. Jay.
Yes, Steve.
July 17th. Minacqua, the Musky Rave, folks. Let us know if you guys are coming out to the Musky Shop Bash and you want to have an after party at one of the local establishments. Let us know. We might be able to do something. We might be able to have some unsupervised fun. Let us know. We will try to, you know, say, hey, let's all go here when this is done. Anyway, Jay Bird, any closing thoughts?
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening. Kick it!
Hello, Minocqua. Are you ready to rock? Put your hands in the air and wave them like you just don't care.
That's right, party people. Get ready for one night of ecstasy. July 17th at the Musky Shop Bash After Party. DJ Tommy Fresh spins all the hottest musky rave tracks all night long.
Let's rock this place.
Come rage all night with me, DJ Tommy Fresh, at the Musky Shop Bash After Party.
The bass. But the fun doesn't end there, folks. Stick around for the After Party. After Party with DJ EJ, a.k.a. Elmer Jensen. And a stirring tribute to Daft Punk by DJ John.